when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging on the first hour. As you well know, just in case you're tuning in, we had Bob Scarborough. He was a veteran. He was a survivor of the United States Ship Liberty. He's in the USS Liberty Association. We're going to continue that program on next week, and we'll end that program on, let me see the calendar, the 10th. Actually, the day the USS Liberty sunk, the anniversary will be June 8th. But we're getting a little jump because there's a lot to be covered. But anyway, people, we're in the second hour right now, and we have the Blood River Radio Sisters coming on, and they're going to run the second hour. And we have my big sister, Nancy Big Stick Carrying Hit, and we have my little baby sister, Monica Braveheart Schaefer. And so I guess we'll go in order of seniority or age, whatever. We'll address the elders, our eldest warrior first. Nancy, are you ready to do battle? How are you doing tonight, little big sister?
Yes, I am. I am ready to do battle. I've been battling all day long. But
well, I know you're going to get your bucket of tar and everything ready. And I do believe that Miss Braveheart is still on the line because I spoke to her just a second ago. How are you doing, Sister Braveheart?
Very well. I always enjoy your introduction, especially the big stick wielding older, meaner sister.
Meaner than hell. Meaner than a snake. She don't take no. Even the cops are afraid of her. But anyway, with that, I'm going to turn this. I'm bailing out right now, and we're putting the helm of the B-17 in the very capable hands of the co-pilots, Big Sister Nancy and little sister, Monica Braveheart. Go ahead, Big Sister. Tell us, since you're the eldest, tell us the audience where you and Braveheart are going to talk about. I'm going to bail out and just bring y'all in and out of the breaks. So go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to start out by reminding people of a couple of monthly celebrations. One is February was Black History Month, and next month, June, we can look forward to Pride Month. And, of course, every month is Jewish Zionist Holocaust Month. Almost every day in the month is something dedicated to the survivors, the elderly survivors, the Holocaust victims, the grandkids, and infants, whatever. It's 8 decades of weeping. But I want to give a tarn feathering to two people. We're going to cover them. Monica and I and Eddie will cover them on this program. I'm going to tarn feather the Jewess Deborah Lipstadt and Target CEO Brian Cornell. Those two fools are going to be subjects that we're going to talk about today. And I would say that on Tuesday of this week, I was watching C-SPAN, and at the House of Representatives, there were a group of people gathered to listen to the Holocaust Remembrance Ceremony. They were digging up the survivors, talking about the survivors of eight decades. This has been going on. As I told Monica, these survivors couldn't remember much of what happened. They had to be mere infants. At 8 decades, that means they're 80-plus years old. But they're
Nancy,
still
maybe they were even born there. They might have even been born in the camps.
Absolutely. Oh, no. Don't tell me that they were really... You mean they allowed these people to have babies in the camp?
Oh, I heard that there was a hospital at Auschwitz. I heard that there were 3,000 babies born there. Hey, they had a swimming pool, too. Did you know that?
I heard about that, too. Swimming pools and all kinds of facilities, education.
And they had orchestras.
Orchestras, yeah.
And theater, yeah. Like children put on theater for the enjoyment of the other inmates, you know. So,
absolutely.
I don't know. It was definitely a camp where they couldn't just leave, you know, the premises at will. But sounds like it wasn't exactly a place where you were about to, you know, go into some kind of a gas chamber, which they never did find or show a drawing of even, or even a plan for. Nobody could ever produce one of those.
When you go back to the horrible tortures that the Germans suffered, whether it be in Czechoslovakia, various countries where the people were attacking them, and these are documented in Poland. I have not been able to read anything that talks about any kind of torture that these people, that was meted out to these so-called survivors and in these camps. Yeah, they had to stay there and they had to work, which was something they didn't really want to do. But I don't remember any statements anywhere authenticating that they were actually tortured. Well, anyway,
no,
of course, I guess they say they were too many. So many of them were murdered. I guess they couldn't tell how many were tortured. I don't know. That's their line anyway.
Well, in fact, not many people know this, but if there were abuses, and if it was of the, you know, the German people, the guards or whoever, in the camps, there is evidence that at least two of them, and it could be more, but Ursula Haverbeck, she uncovered this, that at least two were executed by the Germans for abuse of prisoners. Thanks. You see, so this was strictly against their rules and their you know, code of conduct of the guards and the people who were running the camp. They had very strict guidelines of how to treat the prisoners. And I mean, I've had it in my hands, this huge, thick book, the Kommandanturbefehle, which is the basically all the orders that were given to the workers. I'm talking about the guards, the staff. Mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm, who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm, right.
And it would include such things as do not overcook the vegetables because you lose too much nutrition out of them. I mean, we're talking to the detail.
This
I mean, the
very
Germans
German,
get
very,
yeah, they,
yes,
and
very
they get
specific.
Yeah.
We
they
are
get,
like, I mean, I think the German people are like that. I'm not going to say that my German connection is so distant, but I'm so proud of whatever blood I have. I just think that it's part of the DNA in the German people to be very particular, let's put it that way,
meticulous and particular. And on the one hand, Germans get made fun of for this quality of being very meticulous and particular. They do get sort of blasted for it in when it's, you know, it's kind of sneered at. And at the same time, nobody has ever been able to find a plan, an order, any kind of a budget, any kind of a documentation for any kind of extermination of the Jews in all of German occupied Europe. That was just simply not found. And in spite of the fact that the Allies, they seized tons and tons and tons of government documents when they basically when German capitulated and you know they lost the war because the world basically ganged up on Germany, and they just were never able to produce that. So you have the most ludicrous things come up in testimony. For example, the Great Holocaust trials, as they were called, in Toronto in 1985 and then in 1988, where in the first one, this was against Ernst Sandl, for republishing the booklet, Did 6 Million Really Die? So he was, you know, harassed and his home was firebombed and he was in the courts. And in this trial, the leading witness for their side, the exterminationists' side, Hilberg, Raul Hilberg, I think was his first, Raul Hilberg. Anyway,
yeah,
he said that, like, upon questioning, and Douglas Christie was an excellent attorney for Ernst Sandl, and he was, you know, meticulously questioning him. And finally, Raul Hilberg had to concede that, okay, there was no order, there was no document found, but it was a meeting of the minds of a far-flung bureaucracy. I mean, he said these things. Like, this was just, you know, it was a meeting of the minds. And yet the Germans, on the other hand, are so meticulous, like we've just pointed
absolutely. Out. Absolutely. Absolutely. It doesn't fit into their DNA at all to just assume that this is going to happen. But, you know, back to Deborah Lipstadt, she has a big title now. She is representing the State Department as a special envoy to monitor and combat anti-Semitism. And she was the speaker on Tuesday. She was the main speaker at the Holocaust Remembrance Ceremony in the House of Representatives in D.C. Of course, she said that an attack on Jews is an attack on democracy.
Nancy, we got to go to a quick break. I don't know if you can hear the music. We have to go to a quick break, sister. Be right back, folks.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, we're going to go right back to the Blood River Radio sisters. So if you will, go ahead. I think Monica said she wanted to speak about something that segues into what Nancy said a minute ago. Go ahead. Whichever one of you sisters are up
yes.
next. I didn't note.
Yeah, I'll just follow from what Nancy just quoted Deborah Lipstadt, the great authority on the Holocaust. And I'm putting that in giant quotation marks, but she apparently said anti-Semitism is an attack on democracy. Is that how she worded it, or did she say an attack on Jews? I don't know, but we could talk about what anti-Semitism
is. Yeah, anti-Semitism. Yeah.
Okay. So,
let's just on democracy, and it's
Yeah. So anyway, but I'll just remind the listener to what Ezra Pound said about democracy, and as in particular when the certain tribe of people own and control all the mainstream media, all the press, and so the vehicle by which they tell people how to think and what to think, and disinformation and whatnot. But democracy is Jew speak for country run by Jews. So I suppose Deborah Lipstadt might be right with that particular quote. And while we're talking about Deborah Lipstadt, before we go to our other topic of this pride so-called stuff, and it's all connected, folks, even though it sounds like they're two very, very different subjects, but I would argue that these are, you know, the history that we're being taught, the false history about the Holocaust and World War II, and the importance of making sure that we learn the truth and understand the truth about that, that is very, very much connected to this other topic of this pride stuff with the LGBTQ agenda that is being foisted on us. Because those who call themselves the victims of World War II, and they are actually not the victims, they are the perpetrators of all of this stuff that we're not now seeing happen, and their current battlefront is this LGBTQ stuff. I mean, in the last 3 years, their battlefront was the COVID, you know, and the bioweapon, and get everybody to inject themselves with a bioweapon. And now it's the LGBTQ going into the schools, children younger and younger, and doing things without the consent or knowledge of the parents, very communistic. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked here. I did want to make some reference to Deborah Lipstadt, since that she's the number one, you know, target of being tarred and feathered.
Oh, she's big. She's important now. She's real important.
Yeah,
now.
Really important. Okay, so she's this big, you know, highfalutin professor, a university professor and teaching all about the Holocaust.
No, I was going to say, according to what I could find, since 1993, she's been some kind of professor of modern Jewish history and the Holocaust studies at Emory University in Atlanta, of all places, Atlanta.
Yeah. Anyway,
take her back north to New York.
She also then became famous or infamous by the fact that David Irving, a great British historian who has written many, many good books about World War II history and other history as well. Took her to court for defamation. Now, he lost that trial, but I would say that he didn't lose it in terms of, you know, ultimately
fact.
He's right and she's wrong, but he did lose in the, you know, this court system that we have, which is just so biased in favor of those who control our world so much. But so Germar Rudolph, who is a really, really great revisionist scholar, and he also has been a political prisoner and somebody who did primary research at Auschwitz, and he's a chemist, right? So he was analyzing the walls there of the so-called gas chambers, and just, you know, he conclusively proved that these gas chambers did not exist. Anyway, he did a book called Bungled, and then about her book, Denying the Holocaust. So he takes her book, which is called Denying the Holocaust, and just takes it apart bit by bit. Every single bit of it is taken apart. And just some examples that he gives. Six of the first eight endnotes in her book refer to a bulletin of a Jewish pressure group, the Anti-Defamation League. Now, what's wrong with this? One of the things I learned during my PhD training, this is Germar Rudolph speaking, was to distinguish between quotable and unquotable sources. Now, a newsletter from a political pressure group obviously belongs to the latter. In other words, it's not quotable. It's just not, a very good source to use. And that's just one little example of her book and how it can be shredded and taken apart bit by bit. And there's just so much more in here, but go ahead, Nancy, if you have other comments about her, and I'll see what else I can flip through to find in this book.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to find anything that could disprove her so-called facts. I mean, she's written several books. The one you're talking about is Denying the Holocaust. She wrote another one called History on Trial. She wrote about the Eichmann trial. She wrote about anti-Semitism here and now. She did win the, it was a libel case against the famous David Irving. I don't know how it's going to be paid out, but I think he was fined several million pounds. I don't think David Irving would be financially able to pay any of that, but I hope he doesn't have to pay that. And I think that she was shown up quite a bit court, my understanding, that, of course, I'm sure the court was very biased against him because it took place in England. It was a British court, and they probably have some hard feelings about David Irving and some of the facts that he has uncovered. He's done great detailed work in when the Soviets released these secret documents about World War II. He was able to actually see them, and he's a brilliant man. Now, whether he read them in Russian or had people translate them, but he actually saw the real documents in Russia. And I'm sure that this nitwit, Deborah Lipstadt, has never been bothered about looking at the facts. These people are just talking about this code word of 6 million, which is actually, that's really what it is. That actually, it's a cultish belief that they have been talking about 6 million dead right after the First World War. The First World War, they were crying about 6 million. So it has something to do with their return to Israel. Has little to do with an actual figure of dead people. That's my analysis of it.
You know, why does Deborah Lipstadt refuse to debate Holocaust deniers, as she calls them, as they call them, in a very weaponized word, that is? So, mm-hmm. Obviously, logic would tell us that if their story is so true, and they always say, oh, it's the most documented, the best documented event in history, it's got more evidence for the Holocaust than any other event in history. That's what everybody repeats. It's just a mantra that everybody repeats it. And in fact, the other day I was talking with a local fellow here who is very open to learning. And he said to me, well, isn't it the most documented and, you know, well evidenced event in history? And I said, well, they keep on repeating that sentence, but it isn't actually. Now, Deborah Lipstadt, this is what she says. She says, not ignoring the deniers does not mean engaging them in discussion or debate. In fact, it means not doing that. We cannot debate them for two reasons, one strategic and the other tactical. As we have repeatedly seen, the deniers long to be considered the other side. Engaging them in discussion makes them exactly that. Second, they are contemptuous of the very tool that shape any honest debate, truth and reason. Debating them will be like trying to nail a glob of jelly to the wall. This is her words. Now, isn't it rather opposite? The jelly on the wall, mm-hmm. the glob of jelly on the wall, mm-hmm. is those who refuse to debate, because those of us who would point out the facts and evidence, and people who have actually done primary research, like Robert Faurisson and Germar Rudolph and many, many others, Fred Leuchter and others who have actually gone and studied on site and studied the chemistry and studied the archaeological evidence, the photographic evidence, studied the all these things. Those are actual hard evidence. What does mm-hmm. Deborah have? Mm-hmm. She has this nebulous statement that, oh, well, she also says somewhere else here that she doesn't want to dignify. She doesn't want to dignify the deniers. Okay, I hear the music.
What a cop-out.
Yeah.
Well, folks, we're going to go to a quick break. Be right back to the Blood River Radio Sisters as soon as this commercial break is over with. Be right back, folks.
Thank you. protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm John Schaefer. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said he's confident a deal will be reached by the June 5th deadline to raise the debt ceiling. Speaking at the Capitol this morning, McCarthy said,
I don't give up. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many times it takes. You want to make sure you get an agreement worthy of the American public.
He's meeting with White House negotiators for another round of talks as they try to resolve the final areas of disagreement. For his part, President Biden is also expressing optimism that negotiators are very close to a deal to raise the debt ceiling. Biden made those comments as he left for Camp David for the long holiday weekend. The holiday weekend is a busy one for the travel industry, but Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg is optimistic the airline industry will be able to keep up.
I want to give them some credit. They have stepped up. They have improved hiring. They've got more realistic schedules. We're a long way from saying we're out of the woods or we're fully comfortable, but we've seen a lot of real progress.
He added that if you do get stuck during your travels, almost all of the top 10 airlines now offer meal and ground transportation vouchers for delays. The Texas State House beginning impeachment proceedings on Attorney General Ken Paxton today.
The Republican-led House General Investigating Committee had filed 20 articles of impeachment against Paxton, with allegations ranging from disregard of official duty to bribery and obstruction of justice. Paxton dismissed it as a witch hunt.
The fact that I was prohibited from presenting evidence to defend myself reveals that this shameful process was curated from the start as an act of political retribution.
Paxton has urged supporters to come to the State House to protest the impeachment proceedings. I'm Karen Sloan.
A deal has been reached between Ford and Tesla that will expand access to Tesla charging stations in North America for people with Ford electric vehicles. Ford customers will gain access to 12,000 sites in 2024. This is USA News.
Cashback is not available on gas in New Jersey and Wisconsin.
Hey, good morning. You're heading to the airport, right?
Yep, thanks for checking. I like the car. How long have you been a rideshare driver?
About 3 years now. I really enjoy it.
Isn't it hard to make money these days with the price of gas being so high?
Not for me. I use Upside, the free app that gives you cash back for every gallon of gas you buy.
Wait a minute. Are you saying you actually get real money back when you get gas with the Upside app?
Yep, I get real cash back every time I get gas.
Does that actually add up to anything?
I'll make around $200 to $300.
Wow, that's serious extra cash. I'm downloading the Upside app now.
Download the free Upside app now to earn real cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code STRONG for an extra 25 cents a gallon bonus on your first tank. You can cash out anytime right to your bank account, PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code STRONG for a 25 cents a gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code STRONG.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Dear Blood River Radio audience, we're getting ready to go right back to the Blood River Radio sisters. They're going to continue on. They're going to take the wheel for a minute. I've got to go call a guest, so I'll be right back. Sisters, go ahead and take over the B-17. I'll be right back in just a minute.
Okay, I just want to tell people, if they are interested in getting this book by Germar Rudolph, and it's called Bungled, Denying the Holocaust. In other words, he takes that book by Deborah Lipstadt, which, by the way, she published it, republished it 25 years after she first did it. And, you know, he asked himself, well, is it the same? Did she add stuff? No, she just reprinted it word for word, but put in a slightly different format so that the page numbers will have changed slightly. And he makes the good argument that in those 25 years between her first and second publishing of the book, and now I don't have it right in front of me when that was, I think 2016, yeah, 1993 to 2016. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, that's quite a few years in between. And there's a lot of revisionist work that happened during that span of time. Now, you would think that if she's writing this book called Denying the Holocaust, in quotation marks, that she would have maybe made some additions or some changes or, you know, just adjustments because of the new information that had come out to refute the deniers, as she calls them, or the revisionists, those who say that the Holocaust didn't happen. You'd think that she would have put something in there and addressed those concerns or addressed those things. But no, I mean, in keeping with her attitude that you don't debate with one of these, you know, despicable, hateful, evil Holocaust deniers, well, she just didn't change a word. Anyway, you can get this book.
Amazing. Really amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Castle Hill Publishers, that's who publishes some of these books, Germar Rudolph. And I think if you go to the CODO website, you can find all kinds of books there, including this one. So CODO is CODOH.com. And what that stands for is Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust. Okay, so that's CODOH.com. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you'll find a bookstore there. So anyway, just wanted to say that. Mm-hmm. And over to you, Nancy.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that. The other subject is the tar and feather victim, who's the CEO of Target, Brian Cornell. He's amazing. It's amazing when I did some research on him. He was born in Queens. He has worked. He has had some top positions with a variety of different retailers. Michaels, which is an arts and crafts company, Safeway, which I think is a grocery, Sam's Club, which is connected to Walmart, and now he's the CEO of Target. And this is something that was quoted from the New York Times, that Target has had to, well, it's a partial quote, let's say, Target has had to adjust plans for their marketing supportive of the LGBTQ community after it faced backlash from some customers. The retailer moved its pride displays, including rainbow-striped collared shirts, yellow hoodies reading "Not a Phase," and baby clothing and accessories from the entrances of some Target stores and placed them in the back. And, of course, some of these are stores in the South, which are probably more conservative. And it says that some of the customers were screaming at the employees and throwing the pride-themed merchandise on the floor. And so, but listen to this. They don't buck. CEOs and management are not going to completely buck. They're saying that they've been selling pride merchandise for decades, and they remain committed, according to a spokeswoman. Now, the thing that really got me, this is not what upset Eddie, but what really got me was a bathing suit that they promote that has extra material in the crotch area for those who want to conceal their genitalia. In other words, it's made for a man who wants to pretend to be a woman. I think this is, it just never ends, absolutely never ends. And I think Ed was more concerned about some of the baby onesies that were kind of had satanic sayings on them. And apparently some of this satanic stuff is coming out of England. It's coming from a company called Aprelin, based in London. Some of these designs have been criticized for depicting satanic symbols, pentagrams, and, in quote, Satan respects pronouns. Satan respects pronouns. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, it would be laughable if it wasn't so serious, Nancy. It really would be laughable because we wouldn't even be able to believe that this is happening even just 10 years ago, because it's happening so quickly. And like I mentioned earlier, this is the absolute front of the war right now, and they are going after the children, and they are also actually erasing women. Now, how do all the feminists feel about this, you know, who had fought for so-called equal rights and so-called this and that, which, by the way, I have learned that feminism is the Trojan horse. of our society because it sort of looked good. You know, I mean, I'm a woman, and at first I thought, well, yeah, it sort of sounds good, like equal pay for equal work, all these things, right? But it is the Trojan horse because it pits the sexes against each other. It is a destroyer of families because it is not what it appears to be. So let me just put that out there. That's it's just a backdrop for things I'm going to say here about. Now, you talked about the bathing suit, and that is a perfect segue from there to the fact that in sports, and this is how I want to demonstrate that they are erasing women with this LGBTQ stuff, because, for example, in sports, now men can just compete against women in women's sports by pretending that they are women and just by saying, oh, well, I identify as a woman. And it doesn't even matter if they've got their genitalia intact or not, but they pretend to be women. They compete against women and then they win. Oh, surprise, surprise. They might have been 437th in their own, you know, against men, and all of a sudden they're first by leaps and bounds. Now, something interesting happened. I don't remember if we mentioned this last week or not, but I'm going to just mention it again, even if we did. So there was a swimmer who actually tied with this man, and it was an exact tie to the hundredth of a second, and they didn't even toss a coin to decide who to give the trophy to, and there was only one trophy. They gave it to the man in the women's swimming competition for photo op, for photo opportunity. And so are they not erasing the women by doing this, allowing the men to compete against the women? So, you know, do you remember, it wasn't so long ago that the big topic in sports was always that they were testing for performance-enhancing drugs. I don't hear anybody talking about performance-enhancing drugs anymore, that that's such a problem anymore, because now they've got men competing against women in women's sports. But athletes used to get kicked out or lose their medals if they found even a trace of a performance-enhancing drug in their bloodstream. Imagine that. Going from that to now, you can just have a biological man competing against women in women's sports. Now, that leaves me speechless, and I'm going to hand it over to you, Nancy.
Total hypocrisy. It's just totally, the whole world, again, is totally upside down. It's just total hypocrisy. We have been, people are just being completely bamboozled, and I think, Eddie, I think you wanted to say something about the children's onesies.
Yeah, I was just, that's okay. Y'all were doing a great job, but yeah, from onesies from like, absolutely, you know, they're having a clothes for neonates almost, newborns, two weeks old, all the way up to the onesies. Uh-huh. And they have these satanic symbols on there. They're glorifying Satan, saying they're worshiping Satan. Like you said, Satan is good. He's honest. He cares about people. He cares about their sexuality. He loves trans people. He's really, you know, pronoun kind. Satan. They're absolutely worshiping Satan in the open. They're not just trying to hide it anymore. Well, people, I think I hear the music, so we come right back. People, we'll take this last break of the second hour. We'll be right back, folks.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
Dear Blood River Radio family, we're going to go straight back to Miss Monica because time is slipping away. She has some breaking news. Go ahead, Sister Braveheart.
Yeah, okay, just before I go to that breaking news, just to summarize this whole LGBTQ agenda, there's a five-step process. And people, if you think about it, how it began maybe a few decades ago, okay, just think about these five steps. I'll make it quick. A plea for tolerance. Second step, a plea for acceptance. Third step, a plea for normalization. Fourth step, mm-hmm. demand for compliance. Step five, total conquest. Now, we like to talk about solutions. I would say, and I'm going to say it again, I've said it before.
Repeat those if you don't mind, Ms. Braveheart.
Well, my solution is take your children out of school and do it now. Do it yesterday, preferably. And if you are not parents of children in school, if you have grandchildren, you know, talk to your children about taking your grandchildren out of school, or talk to your friends and neighbors. This is really getting serious, and the speed is, it's just accelerating the agenda, and they are attacking the children with this LGBTQ stuff in the schools. They are doing it behind the parents' back. That is the worst of it. That is pure 100% communism. They're separating the children from the parents. So those five steps: tolerance, acceptance, normalization, compliance, total conquest. That's where, well, we're not going to lose this. Till our dying breath, we're going to be fighting this, but this is we're in that place between step four and five. So people wake up. This is war. We are in a war. That's it. Okay. So anyway, that was to just.
I have to ask a quick question.
Yeah. Okay.
I know you may be a little bit more optimistic than I am. What's going to happen between four and five? Are the people going are they going to sacrifice their children to keep from going to prison, or are they going to fight, Sister Monica?
Well, there's a lot of parents who are fighting back now, and those stories don't make it to the mainstream media, but I have seen plenty of accounts of people, parents, just absolutely raising hell with their school boards. But really, they should just be withdrawing those children. And probably there are lots of parents taking their kids out, but we need to be doing that en masse, folks. Mm-hmm. This is, those are little weapon, you know, in they're little jails for the children, and they're indoctrination cells. So that's absolutely just, I can't even overstress the importance of that.
Yes. And I have a quick comment for our listeners out there, for our more timid listeners, people that are always preaching against violence. We can't have violence, you know, under any cause. We're coming up close to the nut cutting. the line's been drawing in the sand. I'm asking our nonviolent listeners, when they come for your children and say, we're going to cut your little boy's penis off and we're going to sodomize him, or we're going to turn him into our little bitch, are you going to stand and fight, or are you going to worry about violence and you worry about going to prison, or are you going to fight to the last drop of your blood to save your children? That's the question I have for all you. And I'll just say, timid souls for less than, because I can't say what I really think about you on the radio. Back to you, Sister Braveheart.
Yeah, and the people are under a spell because in the mainstream they'll coach it in terms of, well, we have to make a safe environment for these children who were born in the wrong body, and the parents might not be accepting, and then there might be a dangerous environment at home. And please just open your eyes. Do not get pulled into that rhetoric. It is insidious. They do it in very clever and ways. And I mean, I've listened to some of these mainstream reports, and I'm telling you, they are insidiously clever. So do not get pulled into that. But anyway, I do want to tell you about another court case that my brother Alfred Schaefer, he attended court on the 25th of May. That's just a couple of days ago. Happens to be the same day as that most evil of all people who is responsible for the deaths of millions and millions and millions of people, that Henry Kissinger turned 100 and he's still alive. Oh my goodness.
He lived forever.
Oh, sorry to bring that up, that name, but I just happened to notice that was the same date. Anyway, Alfred was at the next level court because a few months ago he was in a lower level court and they sentenced him to another 6 months in jail for showing how high his dog Pavlov can jump, to a prisoner in the courtyard in jail. Now, I'm talking about the straight arm salute that, you know, they used to call the Roman salute. Then the guard was saying, "Hell, Schaefer, that's a Hitler salute, blah, blah, blah." And actually, his friend there, the other prisoner, Alfred didn't even have to say anything because the other prisoner just cheerfully said, "Oh, no, no, he's just showing me how high his dog Pavlov can jump." It was pretty good. Anyway, so this on Thursday was the second court on this second date. Now, the outcome, I can't go into the details, it would take too long, we're running out of time, but the outcome of it is that 6 month sentence holds. So I guess he's supposed to be going back to jail. Now, he's not in jail right now, because what happens is generally they will send him a piece of paper that says, present yourself at the jail at such and such date, or by such and such a date. In other words, he's supposed to bring himself to the jail. Well, he says he has no intention of doing that, and he'll wait for the taxi ride in quotation marks. In other words, you know, they'll have to come and get him, like they did for, you know, various other people. They got the dignified Ursula Haverbeck that way, when, you know, she still had a medical appointment before she went to the jail when she was sentenced, but they picked her up at her home and, you know, just took her. They basically took her. So anyway, that's the story on my brother, I guess. But his attitude is, you know, we are in a war, we're all in some kind of a jail. Now, if he happens to be in those four walls for a while, okay, so be it. Like, okay, this, I'm going to segue to the next person I want to talk about, and that's Vincent Renouard. I will publish this. It'll be published within a couple of hours on my website, freespeechmonica.com. It's just not there right now. So if you're listening right now and you go there, well, in a couple of hours, I'll have this letter published. He wrote a letter from a prison in Edinburgh, Scotland, to the president of France, Emmanuel Macron. And it's an excellent letter. And then you will see what it's all about. But I'm entitling the article, "I Sleep Well, - Political Prisoner Vincent Renouard," because he ends his letter saying, you know, "I sleep well. I am fine. I have done my life's work." And actually, he makes a brilliant case for how all the attention that he is getting means that he's right, and that he's you know, he's obviously done his work well and done it right, because really the forces against us are, they have millions and gazillions of dollars to present their case, but they can't present their case very well, whereas he made some videos and wrote some books and with, you know, on a shoestring budget, and basically presents the facts and evidence. But these are the things that people like Deborah Lipstadt are not interested in, right? So anyway, so over to you. I don't want to hog the last segment here.
No, I'm glad you covered that, and I'm looking at part of the letter. Of course, I copied it, made hard copy. Part of it did not come out, but this is one of his statements. He said, "I have done my duty." Okay, that reminds me of Robert E. Lee. Robert E. Lee said, all you can do is do your duty. He said he's done his duty, and he is sleeping peacefully, and he wrote an extremely detailed and considerate letter to the president of France, pointing out that he has no animosity towards the Jews. He has a neutral feeling about the Jews, that this is not an issue of anti-Semitism or hatred. This is a historical research that he has done, scientific. He's done a scientific research. And I do hope that Macron will at least read the letter, probably not maybe very seriously. What Vincent is trying to appeal to the president of France about is he has an upcoming trial. It seemed like everybody's got something going on June the 8th, but June the 8th, again, goes back to the USS Liberty. But Vincent Renault is in Scotland, and they, even though the British do not have these they don't have an obligation to send him to France for anti-Semitism, but they've got something to do with racism. And the French are trying to try every angle to get him sent back to France to spend time in prison in France. And, of course, what Vincent is trying to do is try to avoid that. And even though he is in prison in Scotland, but he seems to think that that's a little better condition. The conditions in Scotland would be preferable, but I don't think he will be spending 4 or 5 years in the prison in Scotland. I think they're holding him only until his trial decides what they're going to do with him. And the letter, I think, is to try to, you know, to try to get some consideration from the president of France.
Thanks for pointing out those details, because otherwise that gives the context of why is this guy in Scotland writing to the president of France. Yes, they are trying to extradite him. That's right. And they're pulling out all the stops to do so. And you're right. In Scotland, they're just holding him because they can't really let him go while these things are, you know, being decided what to do. And he is being treated quite well there. In fact, he has said in previous letters that the people there, they kind of laugh about it when he tells them what it's about. And you know, so they're treating him better there. I think the prisons in France, he has experience with prisons in multiple places, doesn't he? And I think his experience in France was not so good.
That's right. Well, back to another issue that I just want to comment on. There have been 600 convictions by our corrupt government of the January 6th protesters. And this last conviction is stomach-turning. The founder of the Proud Boys, who really, he only has one eye. I don't know how he lost his eye and what happened there. He's been sentenced to 18 years. I mean, he didn't kill anybody. He didn't beat up anybody. He didn't rob anybody. Again, it's
Sister
kind
Nancy,
of like these revisionists.
That was Stuart Rhodes you're talking about. He was head of the Oath Keepers.
I'm saying Proud Boys.
The one with the eye. Stuart Rhodes was the. He's a former paratrooper. He's a Yale. Educated lawyer, and he started Oath Keepers, and I'll just comment with this right here. You know, Oath Keepers stood squarely against League of the South when the League of the South was in New Orleans protesting the removal of the statues. The Oath Keepers stood with the BLM, so maybe he's getting what he deserved. Anyway, hey,
I have a note here. It's Proud Boys, but you're probably right. Right.
Yes, well, Stuart Rhodes was with the Oath Keepers, but I hope we got less time than I thought. I'm sorry I cut you off, Sister. Well, folks, that's it for the second hour. That's it for the Blood River Radio Sisters. It for me. We're going to bring on Jean the Bitter Ender Andrews, and we got Miss Valerie Protopapas coming on for the third and final hour. So we'll be right back, folks. Hang on to your seats.